everybody. A big thanks to Warby Parker for sponsoring today's episode of How Did This Get Made? Warby Parker is the new way to get boutique-quality, classically crafted eyewear at a revolutionary price point. This is a great deal and an incredible service, so order your glasses online today at warbyparker.com, and you'll receive them within 10 business days. Use the promo code HOW, and you'll receive a free expedited 3-day air shipping. What? Get them glasses in 3 days. Don't forget, this is warbyparker.com, promo code HOW. All right, let's start the show. A touching movie about a father trying to find his lost son in the jungle. No, it has nothing to do about that. This is giant talking gorillas, lasers, and volcanoes. We saw Congo, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater, cause you know you wonder, how did this get made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? I am joined, as always, by June Diane Raphael. How are you, June?
I'm great, Paul. How are you?
Welcome back to the studio after a missed absence from you.
I miss being here.
And also by Jason Manzoukas, who is remote in New York. How are you, Jason?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. And we have a very special guest today, a hilariously funny guy. He writes a Funny or Die, wrote on NTSF, produced on NTSF, and even acted on NTSF. Please welcome Nick Weiger.
Hi, guys. Happy to be here.
All right. So, Congo, let's talk about this movie. This movie is a great, I think it's a great example of having a lot of money and not really knowing, like, it's all there. They didn't have any struggle here. This is, you know, but I don't think that they kind of got everything but the plot. Like, I don't know why this movie is not engaging. It came out a year after Jurassic Park. It was a huge, huge, huge hit. Like, the movie cost $50 million to make, and I think it made like $150 million. So it was a giant hit. But I think it was because people were like, Jurassic Park with monkeys. But then when you think about that, it's not that interesting. I think when you pull it back, it's just like, I don't think it's as scary. Yeah, it's boring.
It's a movie that's about modes of transportation, I feel like.
It's like planes
to get in a new device.
Yeah, it's like planes to trucks to planes to
wrap
hot air balloons.
I did track something. So the movie, basically, the whole movie is getting to this one remote part of Central Africa where this killer group of monkeys is. Now, the movie is 148 minutes. They finally get to that location at one hour and 12 minutes. So basically, the movie has from 112 to 148 to get to the chunk. Like, that's like Indiana Jones. Like, it makes no sense that's the whole movie is like in 20 minutes.
Yes, and I also think there's something tricky to me, and I didn't totally understand it, but they're going to King Solomon, the ancient city that King Solomon had, where there are diamonds. There's a diamond reserve there.
Sure, of course.
Now, what Laura Linney and her and the company she works for are looking to do with the diamonds is use them for communication.
It's so
Can
yeah.
Someone get
Whoa,
at the
weapons.
But right? It was
wait.
Communication but, lasers, though, right?
But they kept on saying this is going to change communication in a major way. I agree with you, Jason. They did use them as weapons, but they kept on saying
that it would
we're
be using
change.
Communications.
Yeah, yeah. It's so like it's such a complicated premise, and it's also like as a companion piece for Jurassic Park, where they took so much time like explaining how the DNA was extracted and was merged with frog DNAs and like incubated. Here they're just like, yeah, diamonds make lasers work for satellites. There you go, you know, and then they just go for it, and it's never really
right,
explained.
So I guess that is what the end game was. I see. Mm-hmm. My feeling, Jason, is that they happened to use them as weapons, but that's not what they were in the market for.
I don't even think that's the kind of thing. I don't think that's the same kind of laser. I think weapon lasers are one thing, and this is what I'm.
What are communication lasers?
Yeah, exactly. I figured the guy, what's the guy's name with the golf club? Because all bad guys carry golf clubs.
Who
is that?
That is, he's a great, he's a John Doe Baker. Isn't that John Doe Baker?
Okay, yeah, you might be right. So he's like the kind of big bad guy. And I feel like he was seemed that whatever his business was had dried up and he needed a new cash cow.
That's what I got.
I thought his new cash cow was going to be like weapon lasers.
Well, here's what I'm looking
for communications.
Well, he works for a travel com, which, like, there's a few different things at play. He works for.
And she worked for the CIA.
At one point.
Used to work for the CIA. So now this is what it says on Wikipedia. That John Doe Baker is exploring the Congo because he wants to find a rare blue diamond that's found at a volcanic site, and that will help expand his communication technologies.
What does that mean? Like, my question is, like, what do they envision the world like? Like, how will this change things?
Because at the end, she puts that diamond in a laser and then shoots it into space, and it blows up a satellite.
It's like the ion cannon from Empire Strikes Back. It, like, can destroy something in orbit, and they haven't explained that beforehand. They've just said, yeah, it makes communications work.
My biggest problem with this bad guy, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, oh, I was just going to say, I want everybody to know who's listening that this movie is so fucking bananas that we have yet to mention the talking monkey.
There is a talking monkey. Yeah, this is nothing compared to the talking monkey. And there's so many things to unpack here. I do want to just talk about one thing in particular. The whole movie is based on the fact that Laura, like, the bad guy, John Doe Baker, who walks around the golf club, you know, basically when he finds out that the expedition he is sent there has been compromised.
And by the way, he sent his own son there.
Yes, he sent his own son there. And when he finds out it went wrong, he basically says, like, my diamonds! Like, he gets mad, and then, like, and he smashes a TV with his golf club. And then Laura Linney's like, hey, we're going to go there and find it, but I want to make sure that you're not sending me there to find a diamond. You're sending me there to, like, find out what happened to your son. And he's like, oh, yes, yes. But it's like it's the worst lie of all time. The man just hit a TV screaming about diamonds. And then
it's just a crazy. I have to say, that was really, to me, kind of unacceptable that he had not a second remorse for his own child. I've never seen an evil guy like that. I mean, it was truly.
He must be
the most evil character. And
when he's revealed at the end of the movie, when they're like, we got the diamond, he's like, diamonds! Like, he's so excited about these diamonds. And then she's like, wait a second.
But keep in mind, these diamonds are for a communications company. Like, that's basically like Rupert Murdoch, or Ted Turner, like, screaming about diamonds.
It's a single-minded yet, like, baffling, like, like, desire he has. He's just so focused on diamonds for some unexplained reason.
And that scene.
Well, for communications.
And that scene is amazing because he really does scream, like, diamonds. Like, that would be like in a parody movie. But here, like, and now to get into maybe more of the chunk of the movie, I would say, here's the big problem. Why not just make the movie about going to rescue the son, like the son's camp? Like, this diamond plotline seems like a real a waste of time and space. Like,
or why not send the expedition there to look for the son just to look good?
Yeah,
just to, like, look good, and then when they're there and they're like, oh, he's dead, be like, hey, oh, I'm super bummed, but, like, maybe look around for some diamonds
because you're there.
Because you guys are there, we solved the central mystery, and you guys still think I'm a cool bro.
he's not a good liar. In any way, he's not a good liar.
Also, it's Laura Linney, I believe it's her ex-fiancé they established,
which
is an interesting detail that doesn't really pay off.
No, and I wanted to know what happened there.
But she seems to really like this ex-fiancé, because it was like an ex, but she's really still emotionally invested in him. Like,
and I thought we were headed toward a love story between her and...
Yes.
What's his face that just was aborted halfway through? I mean, well, he has his own love story with Amy the Gorilla. So I guess there is a love story.
Again, we have yet to touch on the fact that there is a tender love story between a grown man and a talking gorilla.
Yeah, it is.
This is huge, and it makes no sense, and is bizarrely erotic.
I have an issue with the fact that he keeps on telling, and everybody's, like, responding to the fact that the gorilla is talking. The gorilla's not talking. The gorilla has learned sign language.
You're right.
And gorillas, I think we all know, can learn sign language. Like, that's not... I guess what I have a problem with is the movie treats discoveries that have already been made as though they're brand new.
Well, like, I think the new thing in this movie was that this gorilla had a Nintendo Power Glove that would interpret her sign language.
Right, but I guess I actually think this movie is very hateful toward animals.
Oh, because really? Really? Why would you think that? Why would you think?
I just felt like everybody was so excited that the gorilla could use... That we could understand English words. It's like, well, he's already understood sign language.
It's like
it's actually incumbent upon us to learn sign language to understand him.
They liked it because it cut. Though, here's the thing about that. They have a lecture in the beginning where they're kind of showing off this gorilla. And this is my favorite. This movie is full of people that you're like, oh, that guy, that guy, that guy. And Stuart Penkin is kind of like the poor man's Newman in this movie. He's sitting in the audience with Ferris Bueller's mom, and they're watching this presentation, and he's like, ooh, now this got interesting. But we never visit that character again. That's it. Like, you cast a major actor, and he's like, ooh, that's it. Like, I feel like that was a huge plotline cut out of this movie, too. Like, what was that about? Why was he, like, he was set up as an evil guy. Like,
also, just the way they treated, like, at one point, what's the actor's name who plays the girl, Amy's owner and lover?
That is, of course, that is the...
What was his name?
Dylan
I think
Walsh.
Peter was his name.
Okay, so when Peter discovers or starts to realize that Amy might want to go home, Amy the gorilla, because she's been painting pictures of the jungle.
Yeah.
He treats it as though it's this, like... unbelievable idea that a gorilla might want to go back to their habitat. He's like so confounded by it, and only then.
This is a man who works. This is a man who works with a gorilla. Primarily,
I would say he's like a gorilla expert.
You would argue that he was probably the most familiar with gorillas.
This is a man who is making this gorilla as close to his girlfriend as he possibly can.
And when questioned about it, admits it readily. He goes, why did you treat this gorilla, why did you give this gorilla the gift of sign language? He's like, well, because, you know, lonely. He has some sort of quote like about loneliness being, it was a great, he quoted a famous person, a famous poet. About
like a Yeats poem.
Yeah, and so basically he's like, I needed a friend. Like, he needed a friend.
But there
which is
something even more fucked up, because at one point, like, he gives Amy the gorilla a little doll, and she signs out, mother, I'm a mother, or something like that. But then later on, she's referring to herself as his mom.
Yes.
Yeah, and that ties in with like a perverse jealousy she has of other human females. Like, she's like always like batting them away and being
ugly
aggressive
girl.
Towards them.
She calls Laura Linney ugly girl. What she has done is she has... like he is imprinted upon her, whatever that is, and that's a real thing. Like, I remember.
Oh, to use a Twilight term?
No, that is a real thing, because I went to a monkey like conservation.
Oh, well, look at this, June. Now who's the extraordinary girl?
And it's a very serious thing that happens a lot of times with female monkeys and gorillas, where they were really attached to their male handlers, and they won't mate with other animals. Because they want to mate with...
It's like that monkey on Animal Practice. We have a friend who had worked on that show. And the trainer's like, yeah, this monkey wants to fuck me, but I'm not going to fuck that monkey, you know? But that's, you know, he's really into me.
Yeah. And then they try to mate them with actual, like, gorillas and monkeys, and they won't do it.
Well, here's my issue... Again, to talk about Dr. Peter, the monkey expert, he's not a very good doctor either.
Oh, he's terrible.
He lets the monkey drink a martini.
Yeah, that's the weirdest thing. Like,
smoke
on the
a
plane.
Cigar?
Yeah.
The monkey smokes a cigar and drinks a martini, and does both, not like this is the first time I'm doing it. The martini, the monkey knows, calls for it. Like, I need the green drink, and he obviously likes olives, like he likes a dirty martini.
It's really reckless, because most gorillas, when they're, you know, basically humanized over many, many years and taken care of, they cannot survive in the wild. So for him to just drop this gorilla off like that is reprehensible.
Irresponsible? Would you say
it truly is irresponsible?
All in agreement, he's 100% fucking this monkey, right?
I think there's a want. I think he
there
hasn't found the right
crazy
moment.
There is a crazy
one
scene
night,
between them. There is that scene, Jason, where they're rolling around on the ground, and he's like yelling at Amy. He's like, you like that? You like that? And he's tickling her. It's uncomfortable.
Yes. Amy keeps asking to be tickled the way, like, With the kind of like I feel like it was as if she learned a game about being molested and was going to keep playing the game. Like, she might as well have been like, paint on my back, you know, like all the weird like molesty stuff.
Well, and again, we also should just let the audience know, if you've not seen Congo, which is on Netflix and you could easily watch it, there are no real gorillas in this movie. These are clearly people in costumes at all times, which, again, following Jurassic Park must have been a giant letdown to the movie-going audience to see probably just dudes in gorilla suits. So then I kept on thinking, what's Peter's relationship with this dude in a gorilla suit? Like,
or like a child in a gorilla suit. I mean, because I'm sorry, but those gorillas were small.
Yeah, they always are.
I think child labor laws might not allow for that. Okay.
It could be a smaller person in there.
Yeah, I would guess it's like a Warwick Davis thing.
I know that the gorillas, we're only building to an introduction of another weird character, the Tim Curry character.
Oh, man. Whoa.
Let me play you Tim Curry's introduction. Tim Curry's introduction is one of my favorite introductions because it appears that Dr. Peter is having a conversation, a private conversation at a table with the guy who's like not the Orville Redenbacher guy, like the I don't know, he was in a bunch of commercials when I was a kid, but he's having this conversation with this guy, and then all of a sudden Tim Curry's at the foot of the table. He's like, I will pay for this exposition. It's like, were you walking? Were you standing? Like, I didn't, like, that was the most poorly planned. It wasn't like I just think it was so weird. It seemed like if he was standing at the front of the table.
Well, he was at the lecture.
But it seemed like a day had passed. And he was
just
like,
happened to be there.
He just happened to be standing at the table. They were having this private conversation and waited for his line. But here's, just to get a taste of what Tim Curry's like, here's a listen to this.
It's making you what, Dr. Doolittle? Now, there isn't a foundation in motion that would fund an expedition with that objective.
I will pay.
That's Tim Curry.
I will pay for Amy to go home.
And who are you, sir?
Okay, guys, Comoda, I have enough.
Formerly of Romania. Free now.
Somebody
of the chains of
Misty
Ceaușescu.
Rosen
traveling the world, doing good.
That is a little bit of Tim Curry's character. One of the many characters that use their full name at all times.
Yeah, Herkimer Hermolka, right?
Isn't yes. It?
Yeah.
Wait, Jason, what did you say about the gorilla?
I'm sorry. I didn't realize we were still listening to the clip. Sorry about that. I can't hear it. A woman named Misty Rosas is played Amy the gorilla.
Thank God it was a woman.
She's 4'9", guys. She's 4'9".
Oh, no.
Oh, brother.
Because that love story now makes more sense, because I'm fascinated by it.
Do you think that there was a relationship between...
a really hot, like, onset romance?
Between Dylan Walsh and that woman? I think there would have to be something there, because they are so... If you were to cast this movie and would be an actress, there is chemistry between them.
Well, yeah, and it almost seemed like... it was so confusing that there was no love story between Laura Linney and Dr. Peter.
Yeah, that would have kind of salvaged it a little bit, because you'd have been like, oh, his affections were misdirected because he was lonely, but then he was just looking for the right woman. But it's like,
Not at all. And then at the end, I mean, the most disturbing scene, spoiler alert, is when Gorilla Amy is left in the wilderness, and he seems to want to take her back home, even though his main objective was to leave her there. But so he's about to get on the hot air balloon to get out of the Congo.
The movie ends with them escaping in a hot air balloon.
Okay, but when they're about to go, he's looking for Amy to get her, and she's with a silverback. And he looks so destroyed and so replaced. And so there's so much going on in his eyes.
Yes.
And he's like, he basically says, like, oh, looks like a good looking guy.
Yes! Yeah. He goes, oh, she found a silverback.
I'm going to say Dylan Walsh acted the shit out of this part. I mean, you believe that he was in love with this gorilla. I mean, he did a very good job of really being sad. Sad to go. And you have a beautiful woman, Laura Linney. She's in the CIA. She knows how to work knives and guns. You should get interested in her. I would hope. I would think. But then there was a moment. Obviously, Amy saves him. There's a climactic scene where these crazy gorillas, the gray gorillas, the bad guy. Well, we'll get to the bad guy.
Although
gorillas.
I actually was hoping that Amy was going to sacrifice herself for his life. Like, I thought she was going to sort of throw
no,
him.
No, because she's so amazing that she scares all these much bigger gorillas away. That made no sense.
Basically, they needed to cut to Ernie Hudson to be like, they don't understand her. Because it's like, yeah. Why is this very small gorilla with the Xbox power glove that just goes, Amy, thanks, you're ugly. Like, all the girls are like, oh, get away from, like, meanwhile, they've seen humans.
The thing is, so what we're meant to believe is that Amy jumps down to protect Dr. Peter and is basically signing in English everything she needs to say.
Yes.
She can't just scare the other gorillas. So because the gorillas don't speak English, I mean, like, this is fucking mental.
And by the way, like, sort of human voice made by this computer is so girlish and not threatening.
I have that scene. Let's hear that scene. I'll tell you when the clip's over, Jason. Here we go.
Gorillas, ugly, go away.
That is the clip. That's nothing. She basically says, ugly.
Gorillas, ugly, go away.
And the gorillas back away with such a, oh, these are giant, scary gorillas that easily eat a lot of people, kill people, rip off their heads with no problem. By the way, when they do get to that cave, and Grant Heslov, who's gone on to a very big career as a writer, producer with George Clooney, when he runs in, he's like, oh, God, I need help. And then the gorilla kind of tosses someone else's head. But whose head was that? Like,
that was one of
the guy he was talking to about his name being.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. Got it. Okay.
Yes.
Still very strange.
And by the way, that scene was odd.
Yeah. I don't know what that was doing there. They have like a conversation.
I think there were a lot of like runners and storylines that were sort of set up, but then aborted along the way. Like, I think there was this story that was taking place a little bit of like, oh, these people in the Congo who are helping us are just like us, and we're just like them, and they sing California Dreamin'.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, my God. The California Dreamin'.
Oh, my God.
By the way, everyone in the Congo speaks English well. And in this scene, they're, like, getting a raft together, and they're singing everyone in the Congo singing California Dreamin'. I didn't know what to make of that, because that's also not a super I mean, it's popular, but I can't imagine that's a song that translates continents. Like, I feel like they must.
And they just don't they do it when they just literally had to jump out of a moving plane while none of them had ever jumped out of a plane before?
Yes.
Yeah, they all parachute out of this plane. No one seems to give anyone like.
Nobody explains how to parachute. Hudson carries the ape jumps out of a plane with Amy the gorilla hugging him.
Amy the gorilla is unconscious, so it's an unconscious animal.
Right, it's totally dead weight.
What?
Wait, is the gorilla unconscious because of the banana?
Yes, they put that the pill in the banana. So he has a dead weight gorilla.
But by the way, why did they do that? Did they know they were going to have to jump?
Who knows? Those Congo people, yeah.
Yeah, but in addition to giving the monkey or the gorilla alcohol and a cigar, they drug it twice.
Yeah,
yeah, they put that gorilla down a lot.
They can jump out of an airplane holding it.
And everyone is like when that doctor, you know, again, Dr. Peter has never jumped out of a plane. And no one says, like, follow me or jump with me.
Or, like, pull this.
Pull
button.
This.
Yeah, this is how you do it. Anything. They're just like, great. Hey, Grant Heslov and Dr. Peter, strap on parachutes. You'll figure it out.
And Grant Heslov.
California Dreaming.
I feel bad for Grant Heslov, too, because that is the most underused character. Like, basically, Dr. Peter has a buddy who serves no purpose in the movie.
And you think he's kind of set up as, like, a comic relief, but that's not really his purpose.
He doesn't have a lot to do except that scene right before he gets killed.
Yeah, which is
basically it.
Where he basically just goes, that's a weird name. And the guy's like, how would you know it's a weird name? You've never been to where I live. And he's like, oh, I want to go home. And then is immediately killed. But that's all he doesn't have any scientific knowledge. The gorilla doesn't seem to like him. He just is simply just a sounding board. He really is I think he's just really a body that they needed to kill.
Well, you know, talking about superfluous characters, I think ultimately T Tim Curry's character, like, what is he doing there? Because he volunteers to fund the mission, right?
Yes.
And then immediately, like, before they get on the plane, they're like, your credit didn't go through. He didn't have the money, so Laura Linney has to join on, and that's why she gets involved. And then
so
it turns,
why
is he still there? And then it's like, how is his knowledge, like, why does he need this gorilla? Apparently, she's the one who knows where this legendary diamond mine is.
If you're Dr. Peter, and he can't fund this mission anymore, but, like, Dr. Peter can still get over there, and you know in the back of your mind he's looking for something else, and this isn't about getting Amy home, why does he continue to bring him along?
Well, that's the kind of difference between this and Jurassic Park, where Jurassic Park, everybody is there under the same kind of general idea and purpose, basically, even though they're all from disparate elements. Every single person here is under different pretense to be in the jungle, and then none of them ever truly figure out what everybody else is fucking trying to do.
And there's never any comeuppance for any of these characters. Like, they really, like, I mean, Tim Curry, also, his reasoning for finding this lost city is that when he was on an expedition, he found a ring that has an eye on it, but the eye is not very specific.
It's just not unique at all. It's just like, it looks like any eye, and then the girl has been drawing, like, pictures of the eye, and they're like, it's the same eye, and then they get to the temple, and it's got just, like, a normal eye on it. They're like, look, it's the eye the girl has been drawing. Like, what are you talking about?
It's an eye.
Yes.
There is no, like, it was not a marking. It was just a yellow eye with a black slit in the middle. Now, let's just bring this out to, obviously, June. I watched June react to it. I knew about this a little bit before. You know who wrote this movie? John Patrick Shanley, who is an incredibly well-respected...
No!
Yes. Yes. An incredibly well-respected playwright, wrote Doubt.
Danny in the Deep Blue, a million things.
Apparently, I did a little bit of research and found out that they're like, hey, we want you to write this movie. And he's like, I don't want to read this book. Let's just make it about them going to the Congo to find gorillas. He's like, okay, yeah, let's make it. Like, he didn't read the book. He just pitched out line. He pitched out one line, which was, they're in San Francisco and they go to the Congo. And he's like, and they greenlit the movie on that was the only part of the pitch. Like, this is apparently, this Michael Crichton book is apparently very good. But they didn't use the source material. They didn't use it. Like, they have a book that is worthy of it, that is very different than this movie. And they didn't use any of it.
This movie has a wanton disrespect for human and animal life entirely.
Yeah.
Like, Laura Linney's character is a cold-blooded murderer. Like, the finale of the movie is basically her loading a diamond into the laser gun and just cutting giant monkeys in half.
Oh,
and this follows Ernie Hudson annihilating so many monkeys with a machine gun that he runs out of ammunition. He just, like, killed so many of this ancient species.
I thought maybe that was some commentary on, like, you know,
colonialism.
Because when they first go through customs or something at the airport, one of the guards says, you know, we don't ever want to be seen hurting gorillas in your American movies.
But he's like, you Americans ride us so much because we're always killing these gorillas. I guess we got to be on good behavior around you. Ugh. We love killing gorillas, but you guys wrecked it. And that was the sensibility that I got, that they do like killing gorillas. But
I felt like he was making the point, it doesn't matter to you people that everybody's killing each other and, like, presidents are being killed and all this kind of stuff.
In their Mercedes-Benz cars.
What's that?
In their Mercedes-Benz cars.
Yeah, exactly. You only care about, like, if we hurt a gorilla. That was Delroy Lindo in one of the weirdest performances. When he screamed,
I really liked his performance.
I want to play that Stop Eating My Sesame Cake. So obviously they get caught at one point, and Delroy Lindo gives the performance of the movie next to Ernie Hudson, who I wish this would be a franchise of, like, Ernie Hudson as Indiana Jones. Like, I want that kind of thing. But here's Delroy Lindo yelling at Tim Curry, who they have a past here. Here you go.
Mr. Homolka? Stop eating my sesame cake. Stop eating my sesame cake!
And that is a clip there. Stop eating my sesame cake.
Well, one of the best moments to me also is when he gets the money, he gets the bribe money, and a lot of it, he puts it in a paper bag and then staples it. staples the bag over.
No one wants to.
Oh my God, how weird was that? And he said, such I don't want weird... anybody peeking.
Yeah, it was just such a weird, like, great detail that I assume must have been his, all his own.
I also like the fact that during that scene, there's like some perverted guards, like Laura Linney's talking, and one guard just comes up and just starts stroking her hair, and then she like elbows him in the like the dick, and he's like, "Oh, very good, you caught him by surprise." But it's such a it's so weird, and also there's an undercurrent throughout the whole movie that Tim Curry's character is a racist. He's almost getting caught in racist things, like because you're bad dude. Like, he's always like being slightly racist around these in Africa.
Did anybody else think at some point Tim Curry was going to drop the accent and be like, oh, revealed to just be a normal like British gentleman who was impersonating a Romanian character? Because I was like, this accent is preposterous.
Hurricane Mare Hurloda.
Yeah, and he's always saying, from Romania, right, you know, or whatever, like where he's a Ceausescu and all this kind of stuff. Then I was like, at a certain point, he's going to be revealed as a sham.
Well, no, never. Yeah. No, not of course. No, because that's a good acting choice. Now, there's also a lot of scenes in this movie that were odd. Like, there's a scene where they're in the jungle. Because, again, the majority of the movie is just travel. It is a lot of travel. And they say stuff like, I wrote down this one thing where he was like, not a good day to be in Central Africa. An odd thing. Like, you would never say, like, not a good day, like, to be in a just a general like, it wasn't, I don't know if that's a general, like Zaire is a good thing to say.
I feel like this is John Patrick Shanley's version of Apocalypse Now, you know, kind of Joseph Conrad, kind of like, this is his, like, we're going to get them from here to there, up into the jungle and blah, blah, blah. But it's like the worst, dumbest version of that story.
And do they ever comment on the fact, because even when Laura Linney back at the communications firm is watching the first expedition on satellite on the video, there's major rumblings around that city, like major rumblings. And there's
major rumblings.
And there's no like, oh, this volcano must, something's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like nobody ever refers to that again. And then.
Well, was the volcano somehow like tied to, I don't know.
Oh, when they picked up the diamonds. Really...
No, because that's...
Was it because people were messing with the, like...
No, like, see, that's the thing. If they made some sort of point to say, like, oh, you've disrupted it, the volcano just happens to go off. It would have happened with or without them.
Yeah, it kind of feels like if they'd done The Last Crusade, like that final set piece, but without the knight to explain everything.
Yeah.
So you just like, they just take a cup and like the ground starts shaking. You're like, what is happening? You know? It's so like they start gathering diamonds and then just lava comes in after gorillas have been killing them.
So many of the bad gorillas.
Gorillas were committing suicide by jumping into the lava.
Yes,
is that right?
Strange. Yes.
Very strange.
By the way, same producer as Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Maybe he learned his lesson after he saw this. Like, we need that knight to come in there.
The version that it would be as if in this movie, or rather as if in Last Crusade, when they got to where the Holy Grail is, rather than explaining it, the knight attacked them.
Yes, yeah.
Well, also, no one seemed to really know what they were doing. Like, there was no leader in the bunch. The closest leader, and again, we haven't really gotten into him yet, is Ernie Hudson, who you might know from Ghostbusters, as the one that's not the three Ghostbusters. He, the fourth Ghostbuster. He, I think, is an inspired performance. But
he's great.
He was really good. And but he also doesn't seem to be, like, too much of a guide. Like, he kind of, like, he gets it.
Is he being paid by Laura Linney's company? Okay.
Joe Pantoliano hooked him up. Like, Joey Pants is like, hey, you got this guy. He's going to be your leader. He'll get you around.
So really, Laura Linney did everything.
Yes.
And then, why is Tim Curry there? They never just, like, kick him out of the tour group?
Well, yeah, because Tim Curry had no money to finance it. So, but yet, he still was able to come.
But they still take him along.
Yes. Even though he contributed nothing to this expedition. And
he's just now a character that they want there? Why is he there?
And, and then
like, they can't want him to like throw out with.
No, he's, by the way, he's offering very little just in terms of like a person to hang out with.
They're also, this is the moment I was talking about before that I wanted to get to. Like, there's weird moments in this movie where there's like signs of danger, but it never really happens. Like, they're going through the jungle, and this like one of the Congo guides comes up against a snake, and the snake's like, he gets really close to his face, and he just stabs the snake, and the snake dies. It's like, okay, done. And they just keep on moving, but it wasn't like, there was no, it was not a main character. It wasn't really a life and death situation. It was like, and there's, like, I just felt like it was weird to be like, oh yeah, and snakes. I know we're walking, but that wasn't a big deal. Like, because I thought, like, oh, he'll kill that one snake, and then a bigger snake will come out and, like,
well, and I
eat
also,
him.
I also thought that the ghost tribe was going to come back somehow in the last.
Oh, yeah, they set that up, yeah.
But they never.
The ghost tribe, the ghost tribe is a tribe of people who live in the jungles. They have no idea of, like, Western ideas, but yet they understand racism, like, because, like, he, like, they ask him, like, who's in charge? And Ernie Hudson's like, oh, I'm in charge. He's like, oh, you're in charge when you're a black guy. You can't be in charge of white people. But I thought that was a very heady concept for a people that are literally caked in white mud to be understand, like, race, like, to get that. They really got the specifics of race out of it. I thought that was odd.
Well, I did appreciate.
What about the fact that they brought John Hux back from the dead, only to then scream and die again?
Well, he saw the monkey.
See, I actually think
that caused him to die.
Yes, he was scared to death, and it seemed to almost a few people were scared to death by the bad gorillas. Like even when what's his face, the sidekick, Dr. Peter's sidekick, runs in, he doesn't seem that hurt.
No,
he doesn't. He seems like he's frightened to death.
Well, that's the thing. Like, his cuts are almost like some scrapes. It didn't look like his head wasn't gouged, like, his body wasn't gouged out, like, he wasn't missing a limb. He looked like he just stumbled down that step and maybe took a hard hit on that last stoop. It was like, ugh. But yeah, he was not physically hurt.
But that's like the same moment where the head comes flying in.
Yes.
It's kind of like, again, you know, to compare to Jurassic Park, which holds up so well, by contrast, you know, like the moment where Sam Jackson's characters, you know, he gets their arm on his shoulder and he's like, oh, I'm, you know, whatever the line is, I'm glad you're safe. And they reveal it's just the arm and it's so awesome and so scary. It's like the same sort of emotional moment of that, but like such a clumsy execution of it where like one guy is just like, eh, this guy's just fine. But here's some other guy's head that's just going to be flung from off camera.
And where it should have been, it should have been Grant Heslov's head
coming in.
It should have landed at their feet, and they're like, oh, like, but like, because there was no real reason for him to come in, because it's like, help, help.
Whose head dies. Was it?
Like, why just throw
his
head?
It was the head of the guy he had just been having a conversation with.
The guy who kind of said, you don't know anything about where I'm from, Zimbabwe, or whatever.
Also,
right. Where he goes, you speak English?
Yeah, and I assumed that Dr. Peter, because he had that moment with the gorillas. A bunch of the gorillas, where he sort of like had a gorilla whisperer moment with them. I assumed that was going to come back, and he was going to at least try to tame the bad ones.
Yeah, you never. Because he has the moment where the alpha, like the silverback, is confronting him, and like Ernie Hudson's whispering like "Don't move" or whatever, right? And you know he's holding still, and then you know like the gorilla confronts him and then backs away, and then you reveal everyone else ran away, but he was the one guy who like stood up to him, and you're sort of like, oh, okay, so yeah, he is the guy who's like, you know, he understands the mindset of gorillas. But yeah, no, once those evil gorillas come into the picture, like I guess there's no reasoning with them; they're just insane. I don't know. I guess the only way to resolve that is with violence, is what.
Right.
Well,
and we're to understand that they're insane because they were trained by the.
By King Solomon's, like, the mine guarders or something?
I didn't get anything. Like, this whole, like, lost city, like, that. There was very, like, shady information because, again, no one really knew that much. Like, everyone knew a little piece of it, and it was, like, kind of told, like, an oral tradition. Like, someone was like, oh, I heard this, and, well, I heard this, but I guess this is.
I think it was that.
They were used as slaves. The monkeys were used as slaves, and they revolted against their masters. And now they just live there hating humans?
No, that's not it. They weren't slaves. They were...
Yeah, that's what they had those
pictures.
Well,
no, they were owned by them, yes. But they were... They started breeding them so that their violent traits were, like, more dominant. And so they were becoming more and more aggressive.
Why would you do that in a small community?
Because they wanted them to protect, I assume, the diamond... resource.
So they would be on the outskirts.
Oh, do you mean the diamonds that just sit on top of the sand that don't need to be mined at all?
Scattered around willy-nilly.
Like scattered on the scattered on the ground.
Also, I don't know much about diamonds.
Brown diamond?
I don't know much about diamonds.
You know,
but
diamonds that grow out of the sand on the ground.
Yeah, I don't know much about diamonds, but I didn't think that they come in long sticks like Superman's like Fortress of Solitude. Like they're just like these long. Like they are easily like placed and they like put them in that gun with no problem. It's like, oh good, we have this perfect compartment for a perfect diamond fit in there. Like shove it in.
It's like when you go to the orchard to pick apples and it's late in the season and apples have already fallen onto the ground. That's what this is like, except a diamond. Yeah, and I'm pretty, like they call it, it's like a diamond mine or something, but there's no mining involved.
No mining at all. These diamonds are fresh for the taking.
Tim Curry just picks them up like rotten apples and tries to run out with them.
By the way, Tim Curry picks up one and he's like, I'm rich!
Yeah, and his plan is to simply, which I found amazing after all this trouble, was to simply just like pack as many diamonds as he could like into like pockets and shirts and just run out.
And then they're surrounded by the big gray monkeys. The big gray monkeys are like the protectors of the diamonds or whatever. And then, and they have their monkey, Amy, who's with them. They then proceed to shoot with guns and lasers and, like, Uzis and craziness, all of the big gray gorillas, while their gorilla just watches. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, their gorilla doesn't. Well, their gorilla knows that they're bad. Like, that's the other thing, too. It's like, I mean, I guess.
Like, they don't seem bad, to be honest.
They don't. No,
they are the heroes of the movie.
It's like the whole movie is like, you could see, okay, this is going to be like an indictment of colonialism or out of control capitalism. It kind of feels like what they're setting up. But then there's no moment of like, we should study these gorillas or we should like, you know, preserve this endangered species. They just start massacring them instantly.
Anyone would feel that way, it would be Dr. Peter.
Yeah.
Who doesn't at all.
No. Well, no, because these are
people. He never says, we are coming into their world. Yeah. Of course they're attacking
again,
us.
Again.
Like that.
Right, and
he's
they're just, they're being animals.
He should be the Jeff.
He picks up a gun and is shooting gorillas.
You know why?
Like, what?
You know
what
why? Because
Amy think of that?
Because he's afraid these gorillas are going to stone cold bone his girlfriend. That's what he's doing.
Well,
he's a jealous.
Alert. That's what happened.
And then, like, I mean, but he, like, Jeff Goldblum basically spends all of Jurassic Park going, like, we're messing with science. This is not good. Even the scientist, the archaeologist they bring in, Sam Neill, is like, we're messing. This is not. We're on their land. Like, no one in this movie ever goes, we're on their territory.
No, because even though they have been altered, they're not natural gorillas, and they've been, you know, bred this way. That was by human hands. So it's like, one should feel for them no matter what way you cut it.
Instead, we get like Laura Linney running out, getting putting a perfect diamond into her laser, which is for communications, or I guess it's a weapon also. And then she runs in. She gives some like pithy one-liner.
I know what it is. He says, "What are you doing?" And she goes, "I'm putting them on the endangered species list."
Terrible.
And, like, zaps them in half with a laser.
It's the most violent dismemberment in like that you could do in a PG-13 movie. She's like severing gorilla limbs with this laser
terrible.
That she's.
I felt like they just like, oh, we got. It's like our version of a lightsaber. Like, yeah, it's like, but it is a violent end. I mean, this end scene, by the way, too. And no offense to the director of this movie. Everyone has to figure out how to direct like action for a scary creature when you don't want to see them. But his scary action was blurry cam, like the camera's just shaking. It's almost like first person perspective. Like that was,
and then they
reveal the monkeys fine after that. Like that first time, it seems so scary.
They never thought the monkeys, when you do see a close up of their face, they weren't that scary.
No,
they weren't.
No.
Really that scary. Just because, you know, when you wait to reveal the way something looks for that long, I mean, I guess it always might be a disappointment, but boy, was it.
Well,
they just seemed like innocent monkeys to me.
At
like,
the end
I
of the day,
felt like
yeah.
they were the good guys, and these guys came in and fucking, like, ripped
especially,
them apart.
By the way, especially during
diamonds.
Yes, and during that lava scene when they were throwing themselves in the lava, it's like these monkeys don't know which way is up. They're, you know what I mean? They have to.
These monkeys. monkeys. I love that.
Do you
these monkeys don't know which way is up.
Do you want
They're jumping into lava.
Do we want to? Do we? I mean, you would think that they would know how to avoid lava because they live in a volcano. Again, it seems like that would be something they are familiar with, like nature nurture. Like they understand that.
Also, by the way, sorry to interrupt, Paul, but they get on a hot air balloon to get the F out of there. Now, their plane was almost shot down. Another plane that was flying over this area was almost shot down.
It was shot down.
It was shot down, and everybody was killed.
Yes.
So brutally,
that's where the hot air balloon came from, was from the downed plane.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Right, because they went in there, and they knew that there was going to be a hot air balloon.
How is it possible remotely that they would get out of there alive?
Yeah. Oh, I fucking wish there was a post-credit scene where they're like, we're finally getting out of here. And like a rocket launcher goes off and they explode in midair.
Instead, we are left with this amazing clip. Here's the last line of the movie, just in case you want to hear it, which is...
There's a wind. I hope it blows us someplace good.
Me too.
And that is the clip. That is... I hope it blows us someplace good. Me too. That's it. They're not even hoping to go home. Just someplace good. And then start another adventure. Like, it has like that kind of like James Bond, Indiana Jones thing. Like, oh, we'll see you next time. Like, these are not three people that are going to have another adventure together. There's one's an ex-CIA agent. One's like this hunter. And another man is a scientist. This is not a good group. This is not a fun group.
Yeah, and we talked about it earlier, but this is in the aftermath of, you know, they escape the gorillas before they get in the hot air balloon. Laura Linney has a conversation with Bruce Campbell's father, Bruce Campbell being the guy who was killed in the first scene, and his father being the industrialist wielding the golf club, and they have this moment of like, you know, where he screams for the diamonds, and then he makes it very clear that he doesn't care about his son, he only cares about the diamonds, doesn't give a fuck about his son, and so she puts the laser on her shoulder, aims it at the sky and like I guess blows up his communication satellite with the laser,
which is going to cost him a lot of money because he's having a hard time because satellite technology has only gone downhill since 94. I mean, it's really been a failing business.
I wonder if he was on the brink of like creating the internet or something. Like, what
he needs these diamonds to fuel the internet. We need these diamonds,
guys. What if there had been a plane in the sky?
But by the way, just think about this.
She shoots a laser into low orbit and assumes not that she's not going to hit anything else. Like, what the fuck?
Well, by the way, she has amazing aim, as does Ernie Hudson.
Well, no, it locked on. It locked on to the thing. She was able to plug the coordinates in. But I will stay. Okay, so you think of a person and the energy and effort it takes to shoot a grenade launcher or an air-to-ground missile. There's like a little bit of kickback. This is a laser. Again, I can't... can't say it enough. It goes through the atmosphere into space and destroys the satellite in outer space. And it's like, yep, boop, done, did it. Like, that's... I don't even know what he would have done with that thing. And did he only need one diamond? That was the other thing, too. Did he only need one?
Yes, because they were a special type of diamond, right? They were blue diamonds, or they were...
They were blue diamonds.
Not your average diamond.
I thought it was they were unusually big.
Oh.
I don't know.
Here's an interesting fact.
But how can a diamond...
is pure carbon crystal with little impurities. The gems, such as manufactured rubies, are used in mediums like lasers because they have impurities. So that's just a technical thing that this movie is based in nothing. So just so you know, you thought any research happened here, no. Diamonds and lasers never work together.
Huh. Oh, so dumb.
Is it worth talking any bit all about how hard it was to get across the border? They really, they talk about that a lot throughout the movie.
I thought like the Civil War was going to come back too at some point, or there was going to be some sort of wrap up.
Well, that's what's kind of surprising is they spend so much time setting up the political kind of Civil War element of where they are. And then all the movie is about getting to a secret temple in a volcano.
And then what was the weird thing too? Like, and I didn't really understand this. Like, these monkeys would kill humans and then clean up their mess. Like, they would have like a crazy murder scene, and then they're like, "Well, where are all the bodies? What did they do?" And then there was a pit where they had.
Okay, that was really weird because that pit was actually of gorilla, like normal gorillas. was.
Right, but then they had another pit where they found Bruce Campbell.
Where Charlie was.
But then not all the other people, because the other people had disappeared.
Right, but were we to understand that the bad gorillas were actually killing gorillas that weren't...
They did set that up, but there seemed to be, like, normal gorillas in ample supply in the jungle.
That's
they're, like, everywhere.
So
wait, so these are Hitler gorillas. They're, like, creating a genocide for non-gray gorillas?
Yeah, they say at some point, like, those are the bones of the good gorillas.
Yes,
or the, yeah.
That's the skull of a good gorilla, which how he could tell that, by the way. By one glance.
There's a lot of like, oh, you're a scientist? Oh, you're a scientist too? Oh, great, we're scientists.
I would be remiss if I didn't bring out the fact that Jimmy Buffett played a role in this movie, if you didn't see him, as a 727 pilot. He was a pilot in the movie, Jimmy Buffett.
Amazing.
Jimmy Buffett always playing a pilot, also a pilot on Hawaii Five-0. I feel like that's like a rich person's thing. Like Frank Marshall's like, I hung out with Jimmy Buffett in Hawaii. I'm going to put him in my movie. it's a weird, we're having fun. Come on set, you'll be the pilot. Everyone will laugh. Like they did with that Richard Branson in the James Bond movies. He's like, oh, I'm... Sorry to interrupt the podcast for a second, but... We have to pay the bills, and the only way we can pay the bills is by having and sharing with you our amazing sponsors, and today is no different. Some amazing sponsors today. Now, guys, I know that you love the movies and you love TV. They're all the rage. All the kids are talking about them, but it's still important to read, and I know reading is so boring. There's nothing there, but you gotta like sit with a book, but guess what? What if you could hear your reading? That's what I'm talking about. Audible is the leading online provider of audiobooks and audio entertainment. Using Audible means you can read while you do other tasks, like organizing your video collection, you cinema addicts. Like, basically, it's like a podcast, but with books. Instead of listening to people interview comedians, you can listen to books. You can get smart instead of listening to people, chat about the world events. You know, so Audible has 150,000 books to choose from, and you can listen on any device, iPods, iMacs, Kindles, MP3s, eBooks, Audible. You can do whatever you want. All right, so go to Audible now. You'll get a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial. All you have to do is log on to audiblepodcast.com/how. That's H-O-W to get it. Guys, this is actually pretty cool. Start reading again by listening. If you haven't convinced you, what if I told you you could have Michael Showalter narrate his autobiography, Mr. Funny Pants, directly in your earbuds? You won't get that by reading the book. You can't. You have to imagine his voice. Here, they do the imagining for you. So go to audiblepodcast.com/how for a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial. Remember, that's audiblepodcast.com/how for a free audiobook and 30-day free trial. Thank you, Audible. Ladies and gents, Earwolf has a brand new show, and I'm letting you know about it now. So you can get into it before you get on the bandwagon. Before everyone else talks about it, you're getting in on the ground floor. From the guys who brought you the reality show comes Hollywood Handbook. Join Sean Hayes as they guide you through the ins and outs, the highs and lows, the ups and downs of Hollywood. I know you're thinking, do I really need to get hooked on another podcast right now? Yes, you do. The Hollywood Handbook is super funny, satirical, and is going to have a great selection of guests. Check out their first episode with Jake Johnson from New Girl and comment on it in our forums if you're into it. Find out more at the Earwolf website, earwolf.com. Obviously, we have an opinion about the movie, but there are other people who think differently. So now it's time for a second opinion. These are 5-star reviews, cold, from Amazon.
Second opinion.
Let's begin. This first one is called The Myth of the Killer Ape. And it's by Dustin Holmes. He writes, I really like this movie, and I thought it was a great adventure film. In a way, it's kind of like the movie Anaconda, only with killer gorillas instead of snakes. 5 stars.
That's kind of true in a way.
Yeah, they are similar.
Like with Tim Curry being the John Voight, like badly accented character.
Yeah, well, this is... I want to ask a question about accents in a second. This is from Zaina. She goes, after years and years of filthy language and bare boobs and bottoms, it's refreshing for someone like myself to find a traditional adventure movie that's not insulting to my sensibilities and is fun to watch. Too bad these types of films are scarce. Most scriptwriters can't write a line without the F word in it. And love can't be conveyed with them without nudity. But this movie was a treat. Really? Real? That was written in 2001. I don't think that that's... I mean, there are plenty of PG movies without the F word in it. And finally, my favorite review here is Kids Review. It says, Amy, good movie like. Cup, drink, Amy. Amy scared Ernie Hudson. Apple, banana, cup, juice, drink. Amy star, DVD, Easter egg, hidden cup. 5 stars.
That was written by Amy.
I like that one.
That was written by Amy herself. All right, so I have a couple questions here. First of all, Nick, you saw this in the theater. Do you remember seeing this?
I was so hyped for this movie as a kid.
Oh.
I was like super hyped. And I remember as I was watching it, I hadn't seen it since I saw it in the theaters. But as I was rewatching it, there was a moment where they show like they kind of do a Terminator 2 style where you see like kind of the subway they're eating, you know, as the cops are having that scene. They see a bunch of Taco Bell that they've been eating as the scientists have been working late. And I was like, oh, yeah, they had like this Taco Bell promotion. And then I remembered like... I had like a Congo Taco Bell watch I like wore to school.
I did too. I had that too. Yeah.
And I was like really into this like Congo watch, and I was so hyped for this movie, and I went and I saw it in theaters, and it was just garbage, just like so like terrible. And I afterwards I went out outside of the theater and I sat down and I sat in gum.
Oh, no.
I legitimately think this, like, to this day, that was like the worst day of my life. It's like the low point for me.
And then my other question
this was kind of your life September 11th.
My other question is this: the accents. Do you think that it was at the table read that everyone just started to outdo each other with the accents? Because everyone is bringing... I mean, Laura Linney does a fine job, but like all the other side characters, like, I got an accent for you. I got an accent for you. They all kind of throw on some... And no one directed them to lower it down. They're pretty big. Here's a clip of Ernie Hudson talking about what he knows about gorillas. And this, you get the chance to hear his accent as well.
What is that?
Full moon. Full of us monkeys.
That's monkeys?
Mating season. And there's a moon like that, every monkey for 200 miles thinks he's Elvis Presley.
And that is neither here nor there. That is the
more
clip of
like
that.
An affectation.
I like that affectation. I kind of want.
Too.
I really do. Like Ernie Hudson, like really, like he read a thing in. The weird roles articles that they do in Onion, and he loves this part. Now, I don't know. I really like him. I would love to make a movie with Ernie Hudson as this character.
Oh my god!
Any final thoughts? Anything that we didn't cover that anyone feels like we should bring up? Anything? Nothing? We'll talk about it all. Would you recommend people see it?
It is startling to me. It is startling to me how much this movie is just about regular. Pretty much regular gorillas, one of whom happens to have a robotic English voice, and we like it may, I don't know. I guess I'm just trying to get around to the idea that like even in this show we've barely talked about the fact that there was an animal that talked for most of it, and that's
I know. And
that's
there's one point I know.
Is.
There's one point where Dr. Peter says, because there's really no reason under the circumstances where Amy's voice thing should be on. I mean. You know, she shouldn't really have the robotic arm on, you know, because they're really like running for their lives once they hit the Congo.
Yeah.
And there is one scene where Dr. Peter just lowers the volume and goes, oh, I should lower this.
Well, and by the way, and you know, this actually brings up a very good point. Like, she is wearing that backpack throughout the entire movie. And I'm like, well, what is it inside there? It's just a big old speaker. It's like he's carrying like a Bose bookshelf speaker on his back. Like the entire, it seemed like it was too big of a device if it was just a speaker.
Well, I guess my point, too, is, and this is what I keep on coming back to, is that Dr. Peter can understand her sign language because he taught her sign language. Mm-hmm. So the voice box is for...
everyone else who needs to know what Amy's saying for some reason. Yeah.
And then why did they need to bring that with them? And also, if they're dropping her back off in why does she need it at all?
And it should be a part of her transition process that voice box is, you know...
Well, when she goes to be with that guy, she's not wearing it.
No, but I don't remember when it was taken off.
But she clearly puts it on herself for the final scene, because she's not wearing it right before the silverback scene, but then she is wearing it in the final battle scene. So clearly at one point she's like, oh, I better strap this on. I gotta talk English to these gorillas and freak them out.
So stupid.
So would you guys recommend seeing it? It's on Netflix. Would you tell people to watch it?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it's a wonderful mess. The hippo scene is great, which we didn't touch on.
The hippo scene is actually... I wish the movie was actually more like that in a way. Like just because that seemed like more like jungly or something. It just seemed like there's a lot of... that seemed like more of an adventure moment or something. But it's a pretty great movie. It is.
Oh, it's really dumb though.
Yes, very dumb. But John Patrick Shanley, I would say this and then Doubt. Probably this is a man who won the Pulitzer.
That is mind-boggling.
He won the Pulitzer and won an Academy Award for writing Moonstruck. This guy has had the craziest thing. You know, he wrote Joe versus the Volcano. It's a very interesting movie career. So that is that. Before we wrap up, June, you want to talk about your movie?
Yes, Ass Backwards is out on VOD on iTunes right now, and it'll be in theaters November 8th.
I have a quick announcement to make to listen to the mini episode, because we have an extra from the Lindsay Lohan movie, I Know Who Killed Me, wrote in and gave a very detailed experience of what it was like to be on that set, and we're going to play that on our mini episode. Nick, what do you got?
You can follow me on Twitter at Nick Weiger, NICKWIGER, and look for my videos on Funny or Die.
Perfect. Jason?
I don't know. I got nothing.
Well, we thank you guys all for listening. We have a Twitter. It is HDGTM. It's at HDGTM, and you can follow us there. It's our official Twitter. You can write us on our Facebook page. Thank you guys so much, and thank you to everybody here at Earwolf for keeping this show running. Our amazing engineer Frank Capello, our amazing clip puller Avril Haley. Did I pronounce that wrong, Avril? I am sorry. I think I did. I'm sorry. I butchered your name. Katie Dyer, Leanna Waldron, Nathan Kiley, Sonia Weiser, all of these people keep our show running so smooth. Nathan with the research, Sonia with the mini episode help, Leanna with all the amazing art, and Katie just rocking it on the social media side. We love you all. Thank you so much. All right. See you next week.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio, boom.com. The wolf's dead.